First, it's natural for parents to want to help their children. It's what parents do. But it can be easy to go too far, and helping kids turns into managing them, even micromanaging. Our guests now say we should pull back, give kids more control over their lives and their decisions, and they'll be happier, healthier, and better prepared for their adult lives. Bill Stixrud and Ned Johnson are the authors of the new book, The Self-Driven Child, The Science and Sense of Giving Your Kids More Control Over Their Lives. Bill is a clinical neuropsychologist who teaches at the George Washington University School of Medicine. Bill, thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
And Ned is the founder of Prep Matters, a tutoring and test prep service in Washington, D.C. Ned, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much.
Well, Bill, let's start with consequences before we get to the tactics. If kids don't have enough control, if they aren't ultimately self-driven, what kind of bad stuff can happen?
Well, I think that there's two things that we focused on in our book, Rob. And one is that a low sense of control, where you feel helpless or passive or overwhelmed, is probably the most stressful thing in the universe. And the last thing that we want for kids is to grow up feeling chronically stressed. It's just bad for their brain. It's bad for the development. It just places them at risk for anxiety and depression as they get older. And secondly, that we know that a high sense of control or sense of autonomy is crucial for the development of motivation. You really don't become self-driven and self-motivated unless you have the experience, at least large times in your life, where I get to decide. I get to practice running my own life.
And Ned, a key to your book and the concept of the self-driven child is that parents do have some control over how much self-control their kids grow up with, right? We have a lot of influence.
Well, certainly. I mean, you know, we're not advocating that parents step away entirely from their children, but they really be engaged with them in a way that we describe as being a consultant rather than a manager. There's no one who knows more about or cares more about our kids than do we, but we want to do it in a way that's giving them more and more slack in the rope, more and more chances to run their lives, and we want to be authoritative and sharing our wisdom, sharing our advice, but do it in a way that's more collaborative, that's more consultative, rather than being authoritarian and telling them what to do all the while, because ultimately that's not going to help develop their inner drive, and it will also make it really likely that they kind of just tune us out, which then marginalizes all that love and support we want to give them.
And Bill, these decisions over how much to manage kids versus empowering them, being a consultant for them, this actually starts to show up right in kids' brains as they grow up.
Well, it does. And because brains develop according to how they're used. And so we feel that we want kids to practice making decisions, for example, about stuff that's important to them. And we believe that children, and particularly teenagers, should be making most of the important decisions about their own life, because that will shape a brain that when a decision has to be made is focuses on what do I need, what's important to me, because kids want their life to work. And so we think from a brain point of view, empowering kids makes them less stressed, makes them more motivated, and it makes them better decision makers.
And Ned, you guys write in the book that there are a lot of powerful incentives for parents to do the opposite of what you're talking about. We're worried about our kids' success. We think we got to make sure they're staying on the straight and narrow path, doing all the extracurriculars, all the stuff they need to do. There's a lot of reasons why parents might not embrace this idea, right?
Well, yeah, again, everything that parents are doing for their kids, they're doing out of love, and so we're not wanting to wag a finger, but we're trying to perhaps broaden the perspective a little bit and think about you're trying to develop your kid to be an autonomous, successful, happy, well balanced, resilient adult, and so part of that, honestly, is that sometimes things can be a little bumpy along the way. I mean, I think if all of us reflect on who we are as people, and some of the things that helped us develop the courage and the grit that we have, a lot of times that was born out of things that were challenging. And I reflect on my adolescence, and it was kind of rocking places. And I wouldn't necessarily want to relive all that, but I certainly wouldn't want to purge that from my experience and my sense of myself, because some of these things that were struggles for me that I had to handle you know, maybe with support, but I really had to handle for myself, not having someone else solve it for me. Those are the things that I can reflect back on and have confidence going forward, because I know what I've been able to handle in the past. And our kids deserve that same opportunity to experience things, to own their own successes and their own challenges, because that's really what they need to develop a resilient mind.
We're talking to Ned Johnson and Bill Stixrud. They are the co-authors of the new book, The Self-Driven Child. So, Bill, let's get into the how now. How can parents get into that mindset of being a consultant for their kids and not a manager for their kids?
Well, the first thing that we think about is what maybe the most easy way to get started is the second chapter in our book is called "I Love You Too Much to Fight with You About Your Homework," and it's about the idea that you really can't make a kid do his homework, and just having after dinner time be stressful for everybody is just a bad idea for families. One of the most important things for kids is that they feel close to their parents. And fighting about homework is just a bad idea. And so if you say, "I love you too much to fight with you about your homework," then you go into consulting mode and you say, "I'm willing to do anything I can to help. I'm willing to set up a consulting hours from 6:30 to 7:30 and do everything I can to help. But I'm not willing to act like it's my job or be on you all the time about it, because I'll weaken you, because I'll reinforce the idea that somebody other than you is responsible for this."
And Ned, can you talk about finding opportunities at various ages to say, "Hey, this is a position where maybe I don't need to make the call; the kid can make the call."
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I mean, I have a kid who's a sophomore now in high school, and I started really trying to apply this when he was in fifth grade, and I would simply ask him things like, you know, may make a suggestion there. And sometimes he'd say yeah, and sometimes say no. And if he said no, I'd sort of step away if I could, because my experience has been that I've never listened to advice that people that if someone tried to give me advice that I didn't want, I've never really listened to it, and I've never had an experience of forcing advice or help on people and have them sort of go, "Gosh, thanks so much for making me do it your way." So, you know, particularly when we have this proving ground of middle school years, when the stakes are a little bit lower, you ask your kid, "Hey, you know, can I give you a suggestion on that? You know, or would you like my help? Or would it be all right if I read through this with you?" And if they say yeah, well then I'm on their side. And if they say no, well, I don't think we want our kids to feel that we're doing things for them, we're not doing things to them, because it really changes the energy, and then we're working together rather than we see so many kids who resist what's in their own best interest simply because they feel like things are being forced upon them.
Ned, how do we let go? Because very often, I'll speak for myself as a parent, there are two decisions and we feel one is better than the other. How do we step back, even if the kid takes option B?
Well, you know, I've got two teenagers. I hear you. And part of it, I suppose, is taking the long view. You know, certainly some things that look like disasters in the short term end up being, you know, the source of real success long term. And we know that challenges early on often serve as the strength for things later on. But also, you know, if you want to do A and your kid says he wants to do B and you force him to do A rather than do B, the chances, if A doesn't go well, he's going to blame you. And even if A does go well, he's not like to say, "Thanks, you know, thanks a million, Dad." And in part, you know, particularly when we get to the teenage years, I have parents will say things like, "Yeah, we let him make his own decisions, but this choice is too important. And this is his whole life. You know, this is college, whatever. And I hear that. But if you can see it, if you can think about it from your kid's perspective, the message that you're really giving is that I trust you to make decisions about your own life, except when they're really important. And when it's something that's really important about you and your life, you're not the expert on you. Someone other than you is the expert on you." And that, I just don't see how that can possibly be an empowering message that leads to the kind of outcomes that we want.
But Bill, you say in your book, you talk about people objecting. Okay, so is this just no limits, hands off, completely parenting? And you say no, there is a difference between letting kids make their own decisions and still setting responsible parental limits. How do we navigate between those two?
So we think that our approach really falls in the tradition of authoritative parenting, where it's not authoritarian in the sense that we're the boss and telling you what to do all the time and telling you what to believe. But we set limits when we have to. We don't let kids do things that we don't think are right. But we treat the kids respectfully. We treat them like they have a brain in their head and they want their life to work. And so if we act like this and we set limits and we make sure that we just don't do things that we feel are not right for our kids, and we're assertive about what we're willing to do and what we aren't willing to do. So it's not anything goes or you're the boss of everything. But this message that you're the expert on you and that I want you to practice making the decisions about your own life, because I don't want to send you off to college with me having made all the decisions about your own life. And it's just a respectful message that helps kids.
We're talking to Bill Stixrud and Ned Johnson right now about their new book, The Self-Driven Child. They say kids today don't often have enough control over their own lives, and it's making them, in many cases, more anxious, maybe even depressed than before. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you struggled with giving your child more control? How has it worked for you and your kid? Do you have questions for our guests about how to make our children more independent, how to find those decisions where they make the call and we like it? Call in at 800-642-1234. If you're a teenager yourself, definitely love to hear from you on this issue, by the way. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Bill Stixrud and Ned Johnson about their new book, The Self-Driven Child. They say parents aren't giving their children enough control over their lives, and we need to find more ways to let them make their own decisions. It'll be better for them in the long run, even if it doesn't feel that way in the moment. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about this idea of a self-driven child? What's your experience with giving your child control over their own decisions? Too much, you felt like, or not enough? Do you have a question for a guest about how to deploy this idea in your everyday parenting life? Or if you're a teenager, love to hear from you. You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Bill, do you get a sense that we as parents in American culture are getting worse? We're becoming more and more micromanagers for our kids over time?
Yes. I think that kids are experiencing increasingly lower sense of control over their own lives. And parents, understandably, are trying to manage their kids more, in part because everybody's more anxious and more stressed than we used to be. And one of the ways that, as parents, that we manage our anxiety is trying to manage our kids and try to control our kids. So, yeah, I do. I think that Ned and I feel that this is a challenging time to be a parent, particularly with all the technological challenges that kids face and managing that and supervising. And there's a lot of ways in which parents need to be involved in supervising their kids. But it's hard to find a balance between protecting kids when you have to protect them and letting them have the experiences that develop a brain that is used to being self-directed.
And Ned, you work with kids sometimes preparing for college. How do you steer, and this is probably directed at the parents too, I guess, how do you steer parents away from the idea that we need to maximize the use of our time, get the kid to the music lesson, the sport, the extracurricular, the volunteer thing? How do you convince them to back off on that?
Well, you know, one way to think about this is what happens with bodies, right? If you're trying to gain strength or muscle mass or speed, if you go out and run and run and run and run and never take a break, you don't get faster. You'll end up with an injury or you'll end up debilitated. The really rest is the basis of all activity. And so whether we're going to grow with lifting weights, you have a hard workout, you recover. You have a workout, you recover. And the same thing happens with brains. We want kids to work hard, but we don't want it to be at a toxic level. We don't want it to be a chronic level of stress. So we want our kids to work really hard for the things that they are into and then have the chance to, like, go offline and recover and spend fun time with mom and dad or their friends or sports or music or whatever. But the problem is when things are intense all the time, brains, young, developing, vulnerable brains are being bathed in stress hormones that have really bad long-term effects on their mental health, and also on their immediate performance. I mean, you know, I'm a high-priced test prep guy, right? You know, I came at this angle really from a performance perspective, watching kids who I knew were really academic, who I knew were bright, who I knew were capable, and then going into the test and either sort of waffling, if not pancaking, and think, well, that was unexpected. And the more I got into this from a performance perspective, the more I found the things that help kids feel more in control, be more well-rested, you know, being able to make these decisions, not feeling like mom and dad are on top of them all the time, but that are simply supporting them, maybe a little bit, you know, from a distance, you know, as part of the crowd or the audience, rather than being on top of them all the time. When you see that it helps them, it helps them in every facet, including their academic performance, it makes it a pretty easy philosophy to buy into.
Let's go to our callers now. Joan is with us in Germantown. Joan, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for having written this book. I'm going to run right out and get it. Absolutely. Downtime is huge. I have an 18-year-old and I have a 21-year-old. So they both had friends that were scheduled so tightly and not even allowed to make decisions in, like, riding their bicycles to a park a block away as fifth graders in a, you know, two or three kids to do that. And we had one instance where a child, we did an overnight at a hotel. He kind of won a little thing, and so he came with our kids. The young man forgot his swimming towel, and he had to go back to the pool area to get his towel, and he was basically melting down. Apparently he had been so controlled. What if we missed the elevator? Oh. He was so stressed in fourth grade.
Joan, thanks a lot for calling in and sharing that story. Bill, maybe a little dramatic example there, but a lesson: if kids don't have control, what do they do when they have to make decisions for themselves?
Well, they get used to depending on other people, and they lack competence in their own decision-making. And, yeah, I think that that this is why it's just so important for kids to not be directed all the time and not be over-programmed all the time. And the point that Ned made about this rest between this balance between rest and activity, I mean, that's huge. And that kids who are chronically pushed, chronically stretched, that's not what develops your full potential. That's what develops burnout and overload and depression. What develops full potential is fostering kids, really encouraging them to work hard at the stuff they love, encouraging them to work hard and rest hard. It's not that chronic stress, that chronic being driven, that gets kids where we want them to go, where they want to go.
Thanks for that call. We'll go now to Heather with us in Monroe. Heather, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
So I got a question. I have a son. He's older now, but when he was in high school, he wanted nothing to do with anything except playing video games. How do you deal with something like that?
Heather's not the only one in the world with that question. Ned, you want to tackle that?
Oh, we have a whole chapter in our book about this, and it's a challenge. I mean, I guess, you know, one thing is, you know, is it chronic? Is this for years, or is this for a short time? I mean, what I can remember being in sixth grade, and all that I wanted to do, and with all of my friends, was play electronic football. If you can remember, little blips on a screen, and it felt like the most important thing in the world, right? But now, as a 47-year-old father of two, I don't lose a lot of my time playing electronic football, and so these things go in and out. You know, for me, I would, you know, try to be empathetic. My kid right now is playing this game called Fortnite, and it's an online game, and they play with their friends. And what I've tried to do is show interest. Well, tell me about this game, and how does this work, and why do you like to play it? But then we also try to set limits. I mean, if he's taking care of the things that he needs to be taken care of, and that's how he wants to, quote-unquote, waste his time, who am I to say that's, you know, better than I mean, and I understand there are benefits to soccer and sports and all kinds of things, but if that's how he chooses to spend his leisure time rather than reading comic books or some other books, everybody deserves a chance, you know, to sort of waste some time in ways that might be meaningful to them. For me, it's only a problem if it's so much video time that it crowds out things, you know, of sleep, you know, and schoolwork and time with families and time with friends. You know, if it gets to that level, it's a different conversation. But if it's, frankly, teenage boys, wasting time blowing up things on screen, you know, for several hours a week, I don't see that as particularly unbalanced.
I want to share an email from Kimberly. Kimberly is a parent of four teens. She says there's a fine line between allowing decision power and allowing teens to get what they want all the time. She says, we have a daughter we're allowing to possibly leave college at the end of this year because she's not happy. We are holding our breath that it's the right choice for her. Bill, ideally, parents are going to have a lot of those holding our breath and hoping they made the right choice situations.
Right. And we want kids to learn from the mistakes. That Ned and I feel that the best message you can give an adolescent and young adult is that I have confidence in your ability to make decisions about your own life and learn from your mistakes. And as Ned said earlier, all of us have experiences in our life that seem like disaster. And yet a year later or 2 years later, it seemed that things worked out well. I flunked out of graduate school the first time I went, and it was painful, but it was one of the best experiences I could possibly have had because eventually it got me into a different field. It got me from English into psychology, and I'm grateful that I had that experience, and it taught me, too, that I had to pay attention to what was important to me, what I wanted for myself, what made sense to me, and not trying to live up to other people's expectations. So I think that trusting kids and giving them a message, giving them encouraging message that I have confidence that you can figure out your own life. And I'm happy to offer my opinion, although I don't know. I don't know what's right for you, especially for adolescents and young adults. We often don't know what's in their best interest because we don't know who they want to become.
A good place to leave it. Thanks to our guests, Bill Stickrude and Ned Johnson. They are the co-authors of the new book. It's called The Self-Driven Child, The Science and Sense of Giving Your Kids More Control Over Their Lives. Still time for you to share your thoughts. How do you approach parenting? Do you agree with what our guests have been saying about letting kids make decisions? Tweet us over at Central Time WPR.